We're holding on Tess Amadeus, about 6 or 7 lines from the beginning of the Gemara, the line beginning Tchilat. We started talking about Shimshon because the Mishnah had mentioned an example of Midah Keneged Midah, that Shimshon followed his eyes, Morab Holach HaChainav, or the Braisa said Morab Be'enav, he rebelled against the Eibishter with his eyes by saying that this Plishti girl was good in my eye, therefore his eyes ended up getting put out. Okay. Pasuk says, "Vayi achrichein." It happened after this. Vayev isha b'nachal tzedek. He loved a woman in Nachal Tzedek, who shmo Delila, and her name was Delila. So this is the third woman that we find Shimshon involved with. There was the woman, the Plishti woman, that he married in Tibna, which we talked about yesterday.
We don't know her name.
We don't know her name. There was the isha Zoyna from Aza, which is questionable. Does it mean that he actually had relations with her or not?
No,
because what happened is actually after the whole thing where during the wedding, Shimshon put this riddle to the Plishtim about the lion and the honey, and they didn't end up getting it. He wound up he got angry. He left. When he came back sometime later to try and make things up with her, her father tells him, "You know what? Well, you left. So I married a wolf to somebody else." So Shimshon uses that as a further excuse to get back at the Plishtim. This is the thing with foxes, which the Gemara will describe soon. And then at that point, the Plishtim were very upset, who destroyed all their fields like that. They were, Shimshon, the son-in-law, using foxes. Yeah, we'll talk about it soon. The Plishtim said, who did this? They were asking each other, who did this? Oh, it's Shimshon, the son-in-law of that guy from Tibna, which you see, by the way, they didn't identify him as a Yid anymore. They didn't think he's still a faithful Yid. They thought he's a Plishti. And they went and burnt down this guy's house together with the daughter who he had married off to Shimshon and then illegally married off to somebody else. So no, she's out of the picture by now. She was killed in the fire. So there's her, the Zoyna from Aza, and now you have a third one, Delila, which she's the only one whose name is mentioned. Tanya, so we learn a place, Rabbi Yomer, Irmala Lenikra Shmod Delila, if her name had not been called Delila, Ruya Hosech declared Delila, that would have been an appropriate name for her. Why? Delila Meloshim Dildala weakened. Dildala is Koche, she weakened his strength. Dildala is Libra, she weakened his heart. Dildala is Maisiv, and she weakened his deeds. What does that mean? Dildala is Koche, Dichtiva Yasa Kochem Olav. After she shaved off his hair, then his strength left him. Dildala is Libra, because she weakened his heart. Dichtiv, Atera Delila, Kihigidla is called Libra. Delila saw, after she'd been bugging him a bunch of times, tell me your secret, what's the secret of your strength, each time he'd put her off with some excuse, eventually he told her everything that's in his heart, that I'm a Nazir and my strength comes from that. And the Pasuk says he told her all his heart. Dildala is Maisim, and she weakened his Maisim, they start Shechinim in there, because she caused the Shechinah to leave him. Dichtiv, as the Pasuk says, V'hu lo yavik, he said, T'i Hashem, Sar me'olav, it says, when after he explained to her that I'm a Nazir, my strength, apparently the idea, because we see what she did with it, she went and betrayed him, so she went and shaved off his hair and handed him over to the Plishtim. So the Pasuk says that after, whether she was a Jewish girl who went renegade or whether she was a Plishti girl who he was Megayer, different before we shouldn't talk about different possibilities. Doesn't say one way or the other. When she shaved off his hair, it says, "Well, Ula Yodek, Hashem Somer Olav." He didn't realize that Hashem had left him, that the Shekhinah had left him. Okay, going back to Vatera Delila Kihidla is called Libra, it says that Delila saw that he had told her all his heart. Menoyada, how did she know? I mean, 3 times already she had tried to get the secret out of him, and each time he had given her an answer which turned out to be false, if you bind me with ropes, if you bind me with fresh ropes, this, that, the other, so each time it turned out it's not so. But how does all of a sudden she know he's telling the truth? Amar Rav Chanan, Amar Rav, Nikoran Divrei Emes, because words of truth are recognizable. Rashi says, and I would look, she saw all this time he's not cutting his hair, he's not drinking wine, she never understood why. Now when he said, I'm a Nazir, now everything falls into place. So the Divrei Emes are recognizable because they explain things that he didn't understand until then. Abai says a different answer. Yoda Bayboy is a tzaddik to lamapik Shem Shemayim levatolo. She knew that this tzaddik Shimshon would not use the name of Hashem for nothing. Kivin to Amon is you as a kimani. When he said I'm a nazir of Hashem, Amra hashtavadik hushtakama. Then she said now he must definitely be telling the truth. All the previous time when he had told her what supposedly was the secret of his strength, he never used Abish's name. Kushna means the truth. I saw a vote on this, that the Pasuk calls him a tzaddik. I mean, first of all, you know, there's a lot that has happened by that time, but they tell a joke about a guy who's sitting very sadly, and somebody asks him, what's the matter? He says, I have marital troubles. My wife made me a millionaire. Well, what's the problem? That's great. while he's still doing there. So so the same thing. Like he was beyond a tzaddik. He had the shchina with him. He had Ruach HaKodesh chiming in front of him, as the Gemara is going to say soon. So the fact that he, so to speak, downgraded only to a tzaddik shows how far down the Lula had gotten. The Pasuk says a little before that, it says she was pestering him with her words all the time. She kept on pestering him to tell her the secret. And the Pasuk says, she forced him. My Basal Sehu, in what way did she force him to finally tell the secret? While they're having relations, when they're getting to Gemara Bia, this is the final stage of it, she would slip out from underneath him. Which, first of all, then it meant it's a psychological torture for him. Second of all, also Mepharshim talk about it meant that therefore he's now going to be Moitzi Zera L'Vatala, which is a serious Avera, and also, in fact, it would weaken his Koyos of Kedusha, such that now she'd have a better chance of handing him over to the Plishtim. By the way, the Yerushalmi mentions about that, so what about the fact that she didn't have the Hanah via then either? The Yerushalmi gives two answers. Either Taka, a man, feels it more than a woman, or she was Mizana on the side, so she was getting it anyway. Going back...
Have to be so vicious.
It's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I actually saw an interesting explanation. There's a book that came out... Well, so there's actually an interesting thing I saw in a book that came out some 30 years ago called Samson's Struggle. It's an analysis of the relevant Sukkim and Midrashim. They explain like this. Well, first of all, there is the fact that Pasuk mentions the Plishtim offered her a bride. So that already started messing up her judgment. But besides that, she may have figured to herself, look, you know, Shimshon's old, the Plishtim are after him. If they get him, they're going to kill him. At least if I hand him over to them and they promise they won't kill him, they're just going to torture him and whatever, maybe that's better off for him. Whatever. You know, people are good at rationalizing things, especially when there's money involved. Going back now to the beginning of Shimshon's story, the Malach, when he came to Manoach's wife, he tells her, "Atvi Shomrina, now be careful, Baltishti Yayin Veshecher, don't drink wine or strong wine, Baal Totli Kol Tomei, and don't eat anything that's Tomei." So my Kol Tomei, what does it mean, don't eat anything that's Tomei? Another is not also to eat things that are Tomei. The two at Hashi drawing to me, and besides, what until now was she eating things that are Tomei? It means dvarim ha'asurim nazir. Tomei over here means things that are also to a nazir. Meaning, Rashi says, for example, as we learned in nazir, not just actual grapes or wine themselves, but even, for example, bread that was soaked in wine and got the taste of it, or water that had grapes soaked in it, or whatever, as we learned all the dinim over there. Those are all tomei, but in the sense that they're a nazir, have to stay away from.
To the mother,
that's what I'm... Yeah, I said to the mother, yeah, but that means as during her pregnancy, she has to be careful of all the stuff, so that's... Okay. In the middle of the story of Shimshon, it tells over there how at one point Shimshon was fighting against the Plishtim. He took a jawbone of a donkey and killed 1,000 Plishtim with it. Afterward, the Pasuk says he got very thirsty, and he davened to the Eidishter that now it's going to be a Chil Hashem. I'm going to fall into the hands of these Plishtim after I beat them. Yeah, because you're so thirsty. So the Pasuk says, the Eibishter broke open the hollow that was in Lechi. The word Lechi, by the way, has a double meaning. It's the name of the place. The Pasuk says that Shimshon called the place Ramas Lechi. But Lechi also means a jawbone, as in the jawbone of the donkey. Here the Gemara is assuming that that's what it means. So the Eibishter broke open the hollow in there, and there was a socket for one of the teeth. The Eibishter split it open, and water came out of it, and Shimshon was able to drink. Why if it's like that? Who evil the Dover Tomei? He wanted something that is Tomei. The Dover Tomei, therefore his life was made to depend on something Tomei. The donkey's jaw. So the donkey is a trade animal. What do we mean by Dover Tomei? Rashi says it means that, as we talked about yesterday, he had a taiva for Goyish women. He started out with the woman in Timnas, and later on the woman in Aza, and so forth. So therefore the Eibishter showed him, like you're doing, I'll make a nest for you, but I'm going to do it through a Dover Tomei. Marshall mentioned two other possibilities. One is that the Dover Tomei is the jawbone itself. He has to use a donkey's jawbone to kill Plishtim. He can't kill them with his bare hands. Why have to use a Dover Tomei? So therefore, they should use that very Dover Tomei to give him water. And the third possibility is the Dover Tomei is earlier in Shimshon's story. He has the part over there where when he's on his way down to Timna to marry this girl, he meets up with a lion. He rips the lion in half. And later on, he comes by there and finds bees have nested in the lion's carcass, and there's honey over there, and he scoops out the honey and then takes it along with him, and later on, he uses that as a basis for his riddle for the Plishtim. So the idea is that the double tummy, because what they're doing, taking honey from the from a carcass of a stray animal where it may have absorbed some of the taste. Another pasuk about Shimshin, it says, "Vatochel ruach Hashem." The spirit of Hashem. The whole pasuk is "Vatochel ruach Hashem l'famoi." The spirit of Hashem started l'famoi, and l'famoi is meloshin. L'famoi, as the Gemara is going to explain that in a minute, is meloshin a bell. But first, the Gemara is going to deal with the words "Vatochel ruach Hashem." Amar of Chama b'Chanina, Cholsim v'Vuaseh Shviyakov. The word "Vatochel" over here literally means the spirit of Hashem began to rest on him. But to ring in front of him like a bell, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute. The Gemara is dashing batochel meloshin chal, like it took effect. Chos the nevuah of Yaakov Avinu, the nevuah of Yaakov Avinu now took effect. He don nochash al aderech. Yaakov said in his brachas in Parshas Vayechi, "Don shall be a snake on the road." This is where now that Shimshin is starting his career. That's Nisgayim. He was like a snake to the Plishtim, attacking them in secret. The positive thing is that the spirit of Hashem started ringing. L'famoi literally means l'famoi meloshin bell. In Machne Don, Amr Yitzchus Reb Rabami Malamed chose the Shechina mekashkeshes l'fon of kezug. That means that the Shechina was ringing in front of him like a bell. Rashi says l'avoyti b'asher holach. It accompanied him wherever he went. Because he would use the word pamoy, or ksivos and pamoy ridimoy. In the description of the meal of the Kohen Gadol, you have the bells and the pomegranate along the hem of it. So the same thing over here, the pamoy is an expression meaning bells. What's the idea? Various explanations that the Mefarshim have, including the idea the same way as the Kohen Gadol has a bell to show like he's being accompanied with the Shechina everywhere, the same way like it was obvious to everybody that the Shechina is accompanying Shimshin. The Yerushalmi has an expression something along the lines of that his hair was crystalline sort of and would tinkle like bells as he's walking to show everybody how powerful he is.
Cool.
Doesn't say that he was tall necessarily, but wait, we'll get to that soon. Then the pasuk continues that this happened between Sarah and Eshtol. Between Sarah and Eshtol. Amar Abasi, Sarah and Eshtol, Shnei Horim Gdolim are you. This Sarah and Eshtol are actually two big mountains. The Akron Shimshin, V'tochen and Zebazeh. Shimshin uprooted those mountains and ground them against each other to show his strength. Literally, Lavdavta, Ben Yodot talks about maybe it means that he's showing that he controls the Malachim in charge of them. Whatever the point is, again, it's showing that he has the Eibishter is giving him an unusual koyach. Then the pasuk says, going back, the Malach tells Monarch's wife, Tzalpanis, Shimshin's mother, he tells her that you have to be careful during your pregnancy, don't eat anything that's also to another, your son is going to be another. V'hu yachel l'hashiyat Yisrael. He's going to begin saving the Jewish people. Now, what do you mean begin? First of all, the Plishtim had been, there had been a previous Shofet, Shamgar ben Anos, who killed several hundred Plishtim earlier in Sefer Shoftim. And if you mean, and certainly he's not the first one to save the Jewish people, there were a dozen or so Shoftim before him. Amar Rav Chama Rav Chanina, Yachel is Meloshin Chulin. Meloshin, like we learned in Nedarim, and Nazir lo Yachel Dvarai. You're not allowed to break your word of a Neder. Here it means, Amar Huchal Shavuot Shabbat Melech. Avimelech Shavua was canceled. Avimelech had made Abraham promise that you won't deal unfairly with me or my son or my grandson. But now Rashi says, now that the Plishtim had violated their side of the Shavua first, because they were harassing and then controlling and then ruling over the Jewish people, then now the Shavua is canceled and Shimshin can go and then start getting back at them.
Which Shavua?
The Shavua that Avimelech and Abraham made a mutual non-aggression treaty. But now, like this, Avimelech's descendants, Plishtim, are breaking it, then the Jewish people can also break their side of it. Pasuk says, "Vayigdal anar vayivarcheu Hashem." The pasuk says the boy grew up and Hashem benched him. The question is, in what way did the Eibishter bench him? So Rashi explains, usually when the Torah uses that somebody is blessed, the word bracha, it means that something is increased about him. There's nothing particular that we find that was increased about Shimshin. It's strength, okay, but that's the word bracha usually is about something tangible. Rashi mentions, for example, wealth. It can also be a bracha for children or whatever. There's nothing tangible that we find about that was increased by Shimshin. Also, other Mefarshim point out that the part of the question is also why by Yigdal Hana'a, why is it specifically associated with him being a boy? Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Sheberchai Ba'amosai, that the Eibishter gave him a bracha in his organ, in his Eber. Amosik Ibn Adam, his aver is like a normal person's vizare cannot koshet it, but his seed is like a flowing, like an overflowing river. What does this mean? So the basic meaning of it is that Rashi says he had this bracha, he had this tremendous potential for bia. Lamashin is avin is baruch. Rashi says he had a tithe, therefore he was blessed with that. The Poshim talk about it also based on the Yerushalmi. What does it mean? Amosik Ibn Adam. Shimshon was a very powerful person physically. Normally, the kika ish dvurase is a lashon apostate, that a person's strength, the person's power when they're having relations, is proportional to the power in their body. Such a powerful guy like Shimshon, he hurt anybody he was with. So therefore, the Eidusha gave him a bracha that no, his tashmish should have the power to do, he should have the ability to do tashmish as normal people and not harm the women that he's with. But the Zayat and Akashayt, if he has this tremendous, tremendous potential for it. The Ruchnius has a lot of possibilities, and Maral talks about the idea that, which is also brought in Chassidus, that Zera is associated with the brain, Ben Nimshach Memarech Av, therefore it represents the fact Shimshon had a special power in his head, that's why he's a Nazi, he's growing the hair on his head, and therefore that came out also in his Zera. His head power was the fact that he's a Nazi, that he has the special Kedusha in his head. They talk about also, Ben Yoyada talks about the idea that Nachal Shoytif, like a river that sweeps away everything in front of it, like he has tremendous power with his bias to take away a lot of power from Klipa. Going back to what we mentioned yesterday and what we're going to continue mentioning today about Shimshon's relationships with Goyish women, again, whether they were Goyim or whether they were Nisgayer is a whole other issue, but even if they were Nisgayer, it wasn't really a proper Gairus, as the Rambam said, etc., then the idea is that Zare can nachal shoytif, like he has a special power to sweep away a lot of tumah thereby. Okay. Also, there's also an idea that's mentioned up in Kabbalah that Shimshon was a gilgul of Nadav and Avihu. Nadav and Avihu, one of the problems with them is they didn't have children. That's one of the reasons why they die young. So in order to make up for that, Shimshon was given a special power of periodivity, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he had children, I mean, the Pasuk never mentions any children of him, but wait, we'll get to soon now. Okay. At the end of Shimshon's career, he's blinded, the Plishtim have him in their stadium, and they're all laughing at him. The Pasuk says, Vayikra Shimshon al Hashem. Shimshon calls out to the Eidushter, Vayema Hashem alakim zachreni na, remember me please, v'chazkeni na achapam azeh, strengthen me just this one last time, v'yinokma nokam achas mishtei einayim in Plishtim, and let me get revenge now for one of my two eyes from the Plishtim. The Plishtim put out both my eyes, let me get revenge on them for one of my eyes and be able to kill them.
Why not
both? So wait, we'll get to that. So why not both? Okay, so wait, let's first learn the Gemara, and then we'll talk about it a little. Amar Rav, Amar Shimshon, the Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when Shimshon says, remember me, what does the Eved need to remember? Shimshon says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Zecharli Esrim Ushtayim Shana Shefati Es Yisrael, remember for me the 22 years that I judged the Jewish people, V'layamarti La'echad Mehem Havali Makom V'makom V'makom. I never even told one of them, move me the stick from here to there. I never made them do anything for me. So remember that chutz for me. The two eyes, Rashi on the Pasuk says, based on a medrash, that Shimshon is saying, let me have, in return for one eye, let me have black chutz to be able to kill a bunch of them. The other eye, let me save the reward of that for Olam Haba. The Marsha says a little differently. One eye melee, you know, the Mishnah said, Shimshon holochachai, you never did for the push to put out my eyes. So one eye I deserve to have put out, fine, I can't ask for anything for that. That they put out both my eyes, that I have the ability to have. Because one eye, fine, you know, I followed my eyes incorrectly, therefore I got punished by having my eyes put out, but that should have only been one eye. Both eyes, and I have a right to ask that for the second eye I should have the ability one last time to kill the push to. The 22 years business, there's a bit of discussion about that also, where the Pasuk says Shimshon judged the Jewish people for 20 years, so what's the 22? Sort of high going wants to say that Shimshon was in jail for 2 years, and those also, he judged the Jewish people for 20 years, then he was in jail by the Plishtim for 2 years, that also counts, and therefore total 22. The Ritva says we shouldn't be goyrus shayim, and that's why it's in parenthesis over here. Other Mephoshim talk about that there's twice the Pasuk mentions that Shimshon judged the Jewish people for 20 years. And Yerushalmi says on this, that Eber mentioned it several times, and then when it was coming up, Yudshvat Tavshin Lamed, 20 years after the Friedrich of Eber's Estalkos, the Yerushalmi says that the twice 20 years teaches us that the Plishtim were still frightened of Shimshon for 20 years after he died, besides the 20 years that he was Shofet. his effect was still felt 20 years afterwards. So therefore, the Esru Mishtayim then would mean the twice 20 years that I'm having an effect. The Haverly Makom, Makom Makom, by the way, one interesting thing about this, the Chidah brings, so what's the significance, why he's asking the Eibishter to remember that in connection with his eyes? And he brings a story involving a Dayan in Mitzrayim about 400 years ago, named Reb Chaim Kapusi. This Reb Chaim, late in life, he was old, he went blind. People started talking and saying Lashon Hara about him. You know what? The pasuk says, Ki Asherecha Di'Avei Einecha Chachamim, bribery blinds the eyes of the wise. Obviously, he must have taken bribes. Well, he didn't. So he dived into the Eibishter to show everybody that it's not so, and he regained his sight. So therefore, Shimshon is saying now also, remember, I never even asked anybody to do the smallest thing for me, which then could be considered like they did me a favor and now I'm going to treat them nicely in judgment or whatever. Remember that for me and let me get back. I pushed him for one of the eyes that I lost. That I didn't hear of, but I did. The Chidah mentions that he was told Reb Chaim Bala Nes after that. Also, by the way, a stick. The Gemara is going to mention soon that Shimshon was lame in both legs, so therefore he needed a stick to walk around. Even so, he never asked anybody to move the stick for him. Okay, Pasuk says earlier in Shimshon's career, Vayelech Shimshon, Vayukud Shloish Me'etshualim. Shimshon went and captured 300 foxes, and the Pasuk says he took each pair of foxes, he tied a torch between the tails of each pair, and he set them loose in the field that pushed him, and they burned up a huge amount of the crops. Ma'ishna Shualim, why after did he use foxes? Because Shimshon said as follows, let a fox which turns backwards, when you chase after a fox, it doesn't turn and run like most animals do. It backs up, like it sneaks away, sort of. So that it
turns towards you.
It moves backwards, kind of. Suddenly, Rashi says, when you capture it, it doesn't hurry to run away. It like moves backwards in a sneaky way. So foxes that go backwards, the eponymous plishtim shechazi b'shuach, and that should be used to get back at the plishtim who went back on their promise to Avraham Avinu. Marsha also adds, that's why he'd have to tie the torches between the tails of the foxes, again, to express the idea of going backwards.
The tail didn't actually catch fire.
No, the torches caught fire, yeah. Tanya, Amr of Shimon Achazid, Bank Sefer of Shimshin Shishim Amahaya. There were 60 amas between Shimshin's shoulders. Wait. Shanema, the Pasuk says, going back to when Shimshin was in Aza, Vayishkab Shimshin Achatia Laila. Shimshin slept there till the middle of the night. Vayakam Bachatia, meanwhile, the Pushtim are hiding out over there, figuring in the morning we'll get him. He woke up, Vayakam Bachatia Laila, he woke up in the middle of the night. Vayachas Vidalsis Shara Ir Vishtam. He grabbed a hold of the gate. Of the doors of the city gates, the Rishtam Azuzah, and the two doorposts, by Yisoyim Imabriach, he moved them together with the bolt, by Yosem Aksefav, and he put them on his shoulders and carried them, the Pasuk says, all the way to the mountain overlooking Chevron, which is a good distance from Aza. No, not Mezuzah says in the Mezuzah that we put up, Mezuzah says in doorposts. Ugmiri, and we know by tradition, Dain Dalsis Aza, Chosis Meshishim Amad, that the gates of Aza are no less than 60 Amos wide. So what's the point? So Marsha says, if the Pasuk says that he put it Alk Seifav, implies the whole gate had to be on his shoulders, not sticking out. What it means, I mean, you know, Ben Yoyada points out, it can't be literally, because proportionally, then he would have had to be 100 amas tall. I mean, he was a physically powerful guy, but he was still a normal-sized person. So so Ben Yoyada and most of the other Mepharshim take it as a metaphor of one kind or another. Also, the Reb Levi, whenever his father has a bit of a discussion on it in his notes to Masechet Gittin, that the idea of the Kochas Atuma that are represented by the gates of Aza, that Shimshon pulled those out and brought them into Kedusha.
How big would be the gates of the Hazara?
So actually, Reb Levik mentions in that connection that the Kechel, the Kodesh, and the Kodesh and Kodashim, together with 60 Amos long. So therefore, that's the analog, the corresponding thing. The gates of Tumah are 60 Amos wide, and therefore the Kechel is 60 Amos. So yeah. Then the Pasuk says, after they captured Shimshon, by he tochen b'beis ha'asurim, he was grinding in the jail. That's expression of grinding. It doesn't mean they had him turn a millstone. It means it's a lashon of avera, a lashon of znus. You have a pasuk in Iyyah, titcham la'acha ishti. Let my wife grind for others. Which the Gemara will explain in a couple of lines what that means. Melamed, this teacher, that's Shekolach Avechad, Hevilayis Ishtel Aveis Asurim, that every one of the Plishtim brought his wife to the jail, Kadesh to Sabahimenu, in order that she'll become pregnant from Shimshin. But they want to have physically powerful kids like him. A lot of discussion in the Foreshim, I mean, again, about the question how we deal with the Isur, then also for Yid to be with a Goyish woman, especially an Ashes Ish. There's a huge amount of discussion about it, and there are Mepharshim who say that it doesn't mean they actually brought him, their wives, to have relations with him, but rather they brought their wives so that they could see him, and then that way they'll think about him when they're with their husbands, and that way they'll have children like him. Because we know from various Midrashim that what a woman thinks, what their husband and wife think about when they're having relations, affects has a certain effect on the king. Thank you, Shalal. That's part of the problem also, right, exactly. This is like what people say. Kami d'shasa chamra before in front of a person who regularly drinks wine. Chamra, you bring him wine. Kami refuka in front of somebody who regularly who's a gardener who works on the ground. Grid yaduvla, you bring a basket of vegetables. Meaning a person, a person usually tends to get offered what they like. So the same thing. Shimshin, we established before, had a very strong koyach for bia. Therefore, now the Plishtim all bringing him their wives. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan also
after his line,
yeah. Which actually one of the many discussions about it that I saw is there's an opinion in the Gemara and Bava Kamma that says that a blind person is potter from mitzvahs. So therefore, if you argue that the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is only a mitzvah essay, that to go on Kiddush Hashem rather than have a desire to give out Isa Shvichos Dam, if you argue that it's only a mitzvah essay, then maybe you could argue as potter from it, and therefore that's a certain limud zchus on him for the situation. Any man who is mezane ishti mezane nesolam, his wife will also be mezane while she's married to him. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Eov says, Im nifta libi al isha, if my heart was ever seduced by a woman, Val pesach rei yoravti, or I ever waited around by my friend's door to sneak upon his wife when he's out of the house, Ochtiv, and then the Pasuk continues, that he says, in that case, I deserve the following punishment. Titcham la'achar ishti, let my wife grind for others, and we just said that grinding is a euphemism for beer, for znus, Val yichru na'cherin, let others kneel over her. Behind the Amri Inchi, this is like what people say, Iu be kari the itse be butzini. Rashi explains that kari and butzini means small and large pumpkins. So he, the husband, is around the kari, the big pumpkins, and she's around the butzini, the small ones. In other words, the husband and wife tend to have similar interests. If he has an interest in znus, so does she often. So the Chida asks that, in that case, how do you ever have this situation with the Sota? Again, there's a couple of answers. One of them is, we said that every man who is Mizana, his wife tends to be Mizana, not necessarily the other way around. You can have that she's Mizana, and he's not. Or, Ben Yoyoda talks about what the Gemara means, is that when a man is Mizana, you would expect, usually under normal circumstances, but Derech HaTeva, that his wife will tend to want to be Mizana as well. Why should my husband have all the fun? But after all, you have an Ishak Sheira who realizes that that's the wrong thing to do and wants, and vice versa also. Shimshin judged the Jewish people like the Eibush did. Shenema, Don Yodin Amay Ka'achad, the Gemara says, Don will judge his people like the one. The Eibush is one, so the same thing as Shimshin. What does that mean? It includes the idea that Shimshin worked alone, as opposed to all the other Shoftim who led the Jewish people into battle. It includes the idea, some of Hoshim say, that the Medrash says that Yaakov Avinu thought that Shimshin could be Mashiach. That's why he ends up with Shuach Kivisi Hashem, after Don's bracha. When he saw that Shimshin ended up being blinded and killed, so that's not Mashiach after all. In that case, the Shuach Kivisi Hashem. I look forward to the actual Yeshua with the real Mashiach. Therefore, by Mashiach it talks about, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Morach v'doyin, he'll be able to judge people based on smell. So Shimshin also had that ability, Mashiach, yeah.
What is that?
It means like he has a very refined sense of what people are doing. And he doesn't need his eyes to see what they're doing or his ears to hear. He can tell by the smell, which smell is the most ethereal, the most ruchniestic of all our senses. That's the idea, yeah. So we're saying that Shimshin had that ability as well, according to this. Shimshin is before David, yeah. Shimshin al Shmoi Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Nikra. Shimshin is named after the Eibishter. Shenema ki Shemesh Shemogin Hashem Elokim Bavim. As the Pasuk says, Hashem is a sun and shield. You know the explanation about it in Tanya. So therefore, Shemesh is like a name, so to speak, of the Eibishter. Question is, by that logic, should we say that it shouldn't be erased? Different Mephoshim talk about, discuss the question, is the Gemara asking about the word Shemesh from that Pasuk, or is it asking about the name Shimshin? Are we saying that, that maybe the word Shemesh in that Pasuk should be considered a name of the Eibishter and therefore not erased? Or do we mean that the name Shimshin maybe shouldn't be erased? Anyway, Elam Me'ein Shmo Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. No, we don't literally mean that he's that it is a name of Hashem. We mean it's similar to a name of Hashem. Ma HaKadosh Baruch Hu Megin Al Kol HaOlam Kula, just like the Eibishter protects the whole world, which Rashi says, according to this, then the word Shemesh is not, does not mean the sun. According to this, Shemesh means a wall. Which means your walls of your shrine, also love it, will be made out of precious stones. So, Kishemesh, Shemogin, Hashem Elokim, then we would translate that Hashem is a wall and a protection. So, just like the Eibishter protects the whole world, Shimshin Megin B'Dor Al Yisrael, the same thing Shimshin protected the Jewish people in his time. V'Amr Rabbi Yechanan, Bilam Chigur B'Ragla Achasoya, Bilam was lame in one foot, Shinema Vayelach Shefi, the Pasuk says he went Shefi. To do his first nevuah, and Rashi explains that shefi comes from a word, the shof meduchte, that it moved out of its place. Like his leg got dislocated. This is when the first we say that we know when he's going with his donkey on his way to curse the Jewish people. At one point, there's a wall on one side, and the donkey presses against the wall to get away from the mala. At that point, he crushed his leg. Bilam was lame in one leg. Shefi, meloshim, the shof meduchte, that it moved out of its place. Like his leg got dislocated. Shimshin chidu b'shtei raglav haya. Shimshin was lame in both feet. Shenema shefifoin alei oirach. In Yaakov's bracha, he compares Dan, well, Shimshin, to shefifoin. The simple meaning of shefifoin is a type of snake. But we're assuming that shefifoin is like the word double shefi, like shefifoin. Alei oirach on the road. So what's the point? So the point is that I think Maharsha says that one of the other Mepharshim says that the Bilam had such a hatred for the Jewish people that even though he's lame, he still went to the trouble to go and try to curse them. Shimshin had such avas Yisrael that even though he's lame in both legs and can't get around so easily, he still went and did everything he could to, yes.
Depends of
Ava,
which
will tell us. Yeah, that's what it is. Ava and Sinem, which will tell us the story. That's exactly what it is, yeah. Turn it up on. Chamishin Nivru Me'en Dugma Shamayla. There were five people who were created with something in them similar to what's above. So what does that mean? Rashi says, they're different than all other human beings down here in some great thing. Other Mepharshim talk about that Me'ein Dugma Shamayla means they're similar to other Merishin, or similar to Malachim. Anyway, V'chulam Lakubah, each one ended up getting punished through the unique feature that they had. Shimshin B'Koychei, Shimshin had a strength, which was unique. Shol b'tzavore, Shol's neck, Avshalom b'sayre, Avshalom's hair, Tzidkia of the Enof, Tzidkia had his eyes, Asa b'raglav, and Asa, one of the earlier kings of Yehuda, his feet. Shimshin b'koychai, so where we see that each of them had enormous strength in that particular thing, the Gemara is not necessarily going to prove psukim for it. Some of them we can see from the psukim, like Shimshin's strength is pretty obvious. Some of them not so much, and before we talk about different ramazim in the psukim, where we get them from, where each of them was punished in that respective feature, that we do see from the psukim. Shimshin b'koychei dechdiyeh v'yosa koychei me'olav, the Pasuk says his strength left him after the Lula cut his hair. Shol b'tzavore, Shol ended up getting punished via his neck. Dechdiyeh v'yikach Shol v'chereb v'yifa olav, it says Shol took a sword after the plishtim where that almost captured him by the last battle over there at Gavoya. He took his sword and fell on it, and we assume that when he fell on it, it means it cut him through the neck. Yeah, that's a whole different question, how he was allowed to, because one thing is because if the plishtim capture him, they're going to torture him, and that's allowed. There is a great deal of discussion about it in Halacha. Avshalom Sairi, Pidgrain Lamema Kaman, Avshalom got punished through his hair, as the Gemara will talk about starting at the end of Omid Beis. Tzidki of the Enoch, the Tzidki Enoch Tzidki Yahu Iver, it says Tzidki Yahu's eyes and Vahaneta blinded. Mepharshim point what was special about his eyes. So a couple of things Mepharshim point out. One is the Pasuk describes how Tzidkiyahu tried to escape from Yerushalayim through a cave that went all the way to Yericho, except Nebuchadnezzar's soldiers ended up capturing him. It was dark in the cave. By rights, he shouldn't have been able to see. It doesn't say anything about him taking candles or whatever. The fact that he was able to see shows that his eyes had a special koyach for them. Also, they're waiting for him at the other end. Yeah, they're deer passed by and whatever, yeah. Also, other Mefarshim point to a Medrash that says that when Nebuchadnezzar captured Sidkiyahu, he had his soldiers blind him by sticking spears into his eyes, but he was still able to see until they killed his children in front of him, and he started crying, and that's when he went blind. So you see that his eyes had an unusual power to them. Also, Raglov, and also had something unique about his feet, and he ended up getting punished with them. The Pasuk says that when he was old, he got sick in his feet. He got struck with podagra, which in English is called gout. It's a disease of the joints of the feet. But primarily, you feel it in the feet more. Amalei Mazutra Breder of Nachman or of Nachman, Hechidomi Podagra. What does Podagra feel like? Amalei tells him to machat the basar achai. It feels like a needle. It feels like a needle in healthy flesh. It's extremely painful. Yes. Menoyada. How did he know? Ikadami mechashava choshbe. Some say that Rav Nachman himself suffered from Podagra, so therefore he knew what it felt like.
Podagra is gout.
Yeah. The ikadami mirabe shmiele. Others say that Rav Nachman knew because he had heard from his Rebbe. The Ikadamri, and others say a third possibility is an example of Soid Hashem the Yireyev Uvrit Elohim. There's certain secrets of nature that the Eibishter reveals to Tzadikim, even though they themselves have no natural way of knowing it. That's according to that version. That's from his Rebbe, yeah. Dorash Rav, Mepnei Ma Nenash Osa, why was Osa punished? Mepnei Sha Osa An Gaviyah Petamet HaChamim, because he used the Tamet HaChamim for forced labor. The Pasuk says, King Asa gathered together the whole Jewish people. Nobody was exempt. What happened over here? In brief, the Pasuk describes that Baasha, the king of Israel, started a war against Asa. He had fortifications built to block the way to Yerushalayim in order to besiege the land of Yehuda. Asa arranged with the king of Aram to go and attack him from the north in order that Baasha should be forced to deal with that and leave Eretz Yehuda alone. And then the Pasuk says that Asa gathered everybody together to take apart these fortifications.
Asa was
the king of Yehuda. He was a great grandson of Shlomo HaMelech. So my Einoki, what do you mean Einoki? Nobody is exempt. Amar of Yehuda Amar Rav, afilo chosen mechedre v'kalo mechupasa. It means he took even the chosen from his room. And then the Kala from the Chuppah, even they were conscripted for this. So them, and also the Chamech, and also the, well, so they're allowed from Muhammad's Mitzvah. The point is, Marshal says this wasn't a Muhammad's Mitzvah. Baasha had already left. He's dealing with the threat from Aram. It's not such an urgent thing that you need to get the Chos and the Chedra, the Kala and the Chuppah right there. And certainly not the Chamech HaChamim, and that's what he was punished for.
By
having gout. By having the disease of gout. It's pretty painful. Okay. Well, nowadays they have medicines for it. Then they didn't, you know. Okay. See, the pasuk says Vayered Shimshon. Going back to Shimshon now. See, Vayered Shimshon Timnah. So the pasuk says that Shimshon went down to Timnah. Uchtiv. Then you have a different pasuk. By Yehuda, Hinei Chamich Ola Timnah. They told Tamar, your father-in-law is going up to Timnah. So what is it? Do you go down to get there or up? Amar Rav Elazar, Shimshon, Shinis Ganaba, Shimshon, who ended up being degraded through it because he married this plishti girl, Ksidbe Yerida. So it says by him, he went down. Beruchni Yosef, Yehuda, Shinis Alaba, Yehuda, who went up a level in Timnah, because that's where he ended up being with Tamar, and she became pregnant and had Peretz and Zerach, who was the ancestor of David HaMelech. Nisala, therefore it says by him Aliyah. Rav Shmuel Menachmeni, Amar Shtei Timnah, I saw you. There were two places named Timnah. Chodab Yerida, Chodab Aliyah. One you have to go down to get to, and one you have to go up. Rapapa, I'm a chod of Timnah, boy. No, there's only one Timnah. The Asim Ahai Gis Yirid or the Asim Ahai Gis Aliyah. It's just it's on the slope of a mountain. From one direction you have to go down, and from the other direction you have to go up. Keep going. Vardunya, Vebari, Veshukha Dinerish. Like in three places in Bavel, Vardunya and Vebari and Shukha Dinerish, where one is on the top of a mountain, one's on the bottom, and one's in the middle. But you see, Timnah could have been on the side of a mountain also. There's a Rashi Sikha in Chavik Yud where the Rebbe analyzes, or Rashi brings on the Pasuk over there, only the possibility, only a third answer over here, that Timnah was in the middle of a mountain. And the Rebbe analyzes why Rashi preferred only that one, and a number of other things. One thing is, the Rebbe points out, it's very unusual that a mountain, that a city should be built on the side of a mountain. Either you build it on the top, so it's more defensible, or on the bottom, so it's easier to get to and whatever. Why would you build it in the middle of a mountain? Nevertheless, we see from the example the Gemara gives here about Junya Bebari Bishukha Dinerish, sometimes for whatever reason they do that. So same thing over here. Timnah could have been like that. But Well, originally he was going there in order to shear his sheep. She took advantage of the situation, and the Gemara is going to now analyze a little bit from here until the middle of the next Talmud. The Gemara is going to digress from the whole thing about Shimshon and talk about the story of Yehuda and Tamar. The pasuk says about Teshuv Pesach Einayim. It says that Tamar dressed himself up as a Zoyna and sat for Pesach Einayim. It means that she went and sat by the door of Avram Avinu. This is long after Avram passed away, but meaning the door, either it means the door where he had lived beforehand, or the Mepharshim would say that it means she went to Ma'aretz Machpelah, and there are some Mepharshim who say that it means that metaphorically, like she davened, let me have the chance to join and have children from the family of Avram Avinu. Let me become part of this household. But remember, she had been married to Aaron Oinon. She didn't have children with either of them. They both died young. Now she wants to get Yehuda to make her pregnant. So she has to daven. Let me have a chance to join Avraham Avinu's family. Well, Yehuda didn't know, obviously, but there's only two times that,
Yes, no.
Wait. Why do we call it Pesach Einayim? Mokam Shechol Einayim Tzofes L'Roiset. It's the place where all eyes look forward to seeing it. Rav Chanan says in the name of Rav, though, no, Mokam Ushishmoy Einayim, no, it's just the name, it means she sat by the entrance of a place called Einayim. V'chenu Omer Tapuach V'Einam, as you find in Yoshua, the name of a city called Einam. Einam, Einayim, same thing. Rav Shmuel Menachmeni Omer, it means Shenosna Einayim L'Dvoreach Shetava. It means that she gave eyes, she made a reasonable argument when you heard a proposition to her that she explained how there's no problem, I'm Mutter to you. Namely, Amalah, he says to her, Shema Nochrisat, are you a goita? Amalah Giyarisani. She says, no, I'm a Giyaris. Shema Eshet Ishat, are you a married woman? Amalah Pnoyani, I'm unmarried. Shema Kibubach Avich Kedushin, maybe, how do you know you're not married? Maybe your father accepted Kedushin on your behalf, and we learned in Silvus that works. Amalah Yisaymani, she says, I'm a Yosem. Yes, I was married before. My mother or my brothers married me off, and Midaraisa, that has no effect. You learned in Yubamas that's only affected Midarabanon, and even Numion.
But she was a Giyaris when she spoke.
She was, effectively. She's a descendant of Shem. Giyaris meaning that she... Well, there's different explanations I'm afraid she had, but one of them is she's a Giyaris in the sense that she voluntarily joined the Jewish people. Rashi, by the way, points out there's a famous vote that she was actually a daughter of Shem. But according to what the Gemara is saying over here, if she said Yisomani when I was married, that's not possible. Shem had died some 60 years earlier. She couldn't possibly have been a Kana at the time if she was a daughter of Shem, she wouldn't have been a Kana when she married Aaron the Noyan.
So,
different Midrashim. Some of the Parashim say that when the Midrash says that she was a daughter of Shem, it doesn't mean literally a daughter, it means a descendant. She asks her, Shema Tmeyat, are you Tomei, are you Nida? Amalei Tahirani, she says, no, I'm Tahir. But therefore, in other words, she had Einayim, she had eyes to show him the proper way that, no, there's no problem at all with you being with me. The only thing was that she's a Zayna, but that we talked about before, that Amram says before Matan Torah, such things were allowed. Going now on a digression of a digression, since we mentioned Avraham Avinu, door, we're going to digress to talk about that a little bit. The pasuk says, Vayita Eshel Be'er Sheva, that Avraham Avinu planted an Eshel in Be'er Sheva. This teaches us that Avraham planted an orchard, and he planted in it all kinds of trees with delicious fruit for the Arachim. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia have a similar argument about it. Chadam a paradis or chadam a pundak. One says that the Eshel is an orchard, the other one says it means an inn. The Rebbe, by the way, points out that Hagav and Asicha, I mean, the word Eshel basically means a tree. Why don't we just say plain and simple, it means Avraham planted a tree? And the answer is, we know from elsewhere in the Torah that planting trees is not necessarily such a good thing. Planting an Asherah is a hateful thing. So why should we assume that Avraham planted a tree just without any good reason? Better we should understand that it means one of these things. Having said that, there are Mepharshim who say that.
We cannot presume.
No, not, but in other words, Vayita, especially since the positive thing is Vayit Roshav Hashem Hashem, as we'll talk about on another page, why is a tree specifically associated with calling out in the name of Eishel? And do I'm a poet who say that on the simple level, Eishel means a tree. Okay, you planted a tree as a landmark, or for shade, or whatever, yeah. Okay, so Bishlam Lamandrava Paradis, okay, I can understand according to the opinion that says that the Eishel is an orchard, Hainos Vayita, that's what it means, he planted trees for an orchard. El Lamandrava Pundak, but if you say it means he set up an inn for guests, my vayita, what's the word planting? Okay, you have a passage in Daniel that mentions that a certain king will plant the tents of his palace. So you see that tent, that planting can be used of tents and buildings. Rashi mentions over here the famous thing over here, how do we get that Eshel? It means an inn, because the famous thing that Eshel stands for Achilosh Tzil Via, that Avram would give them food, drink, and escort them. Ulina, the vendor says, yeah. Then the pasuk says, "Vayikra Shem b'Shem Hashem Kelo Elam," that he called out there in the name of Hashem, the God of the world. Amarish Lachish Altikra Vayikra Elavayakri. Don't read the pasuk Vayikra that Abraham Avinu called out, but Vayakri he made everybody else call out. Malamet Shehikri Abraham Avinu L'Shmaya Shalakot Shvachu B'Fekol Oyver Vashal. This teaches us that Abraham Avinu made all the passers by call out the Eibush's name. Ketzad La'achas She'ochel Vashal. So after they would eat and drink, Amdu L'Vorcho, they would want to bless Abraham. He would tell them, did you eat my food? You ate from what belongs to the God of the world. Maybe you created the world. You should thank and praise and bless the one who created and the one who said in the world came into existence. And Tosfos Shantz over here brings the famous thing from the Medrash, that the sequel to this, what happened, you would have guests who wouldn't want to. What is there, some God out there, you know what? You're the one who gave us food, we want to bless. Okay, well, then in that case, pay up. We're in the middle of the desert. You're going to have to pay huge amounts for all the food. Where else are you going to get food in the desert? And when they realize the predicament, they're in, okay, you know what, you didn't mention, you know what, then fine, we'll bless your God.
Can you do that?
So there's a famous sikha where it ever talks about, so what good is that? You know, a forced acknowledgement to the Eibush, is that worth anything? Yes, that ever says, because deep down, everybody believes in the Eibushter. So yes, you may need a certain kind of coercion, like Avraham Avinu uses, which is perfectly all right off Yalacha. The fact is, you would have had the right to charge them all this money for food in the middle of the desert. But when they end up benching the Eibushter, rather than have to pay all that amount, it means it really comes from the deep part inside them that really believed in the Eibushter all along, and it was covered up by their Yetzer Hara. No, it's talking about Goyim. Even Goyim. It's one of the Shevamot of Neneach to believe in the Eibushter. Okay, so then in that case, deep down, they also have a certain belief in the Eibushter. Maybe the Korolei or the Kodei Alakaya. Maybe they don't have the direct relationship with the Eibushter that we do, but still.
They don't have an Eshana. Not
a formal grace after meals, no, but they don't have an Eshana gift, but okay. Besides, this is before Matan Torah, the differences between Jews and Goyim are not so clear-cut anyway. Fine, but this is before Matan Torah. There's no limit to who can have it. It's not like after Matan Torah, where only if you're born from a Jewish mother or you're a ger, you have a, Maybe anybody who followed Avraham Avinu got a Nefesh Elokim thereby. I don't know. Going back to Tamar and Yehuda, the pasuk says, "Vayir'er Yehuda v'yachshevel azona kikitza panah." It says Yehuda saw her, and he thought she was a zona because she covered her face. What's the connection between the kids up on air fish with Hashwell Zaina? Well, because she covered her face, she thought she was a Zaina. Well, who are the other way around? A Zaina with Hashwell Zaina covers her face. Okay, the Ramban on the Pasuk says on the simple chat level, yes, you could say that was the custom of Zainas in those days. Okay, but still. Omer Abalaza, it means she kissed the Panea of a base Chamir. It means that when she lived in her father in law's house, when she was married to Aaron and to Onan, she used to keep her face covered. So Rashi says, therefore, all that time, Yehuda never saw her face. So now when he sees her sitting there with her face uncovered, he didn't recognize her. Then Hagoyt Abach adds to Rashi a second thing. I guess this was in his Girsha, in his Girsha of Rashi, that another possibility is that because she was always theistic and always had her face covered when she lived with when she was married to Aaron and then to Oinon, now when he sees her with her face uncovered, yes, maybe he might have recognized the voice, sounds familiar or something, but nah, can't be her. I know Tamar. She's a theistic lady. She wouldn't be sitting over here like this. He took away his wife for his children, so they saw her. He didn't.
So the Muslim women have a
okay.
Brand to cover
okay.
Their face.
Okay. The Amr of Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amr of Yenison, Kol Kala Sheik Chamiya, any Kala who's theistic, you know, when she's living in her father-in-law's house, Zoycha v'yotin men malachim and neviim. She will be Zoycha that kings and neviim will descend from her. Or at least people who have the ability to be kings and neviim. And nowadays we don't have kings and neviim, but they have who are on that level. Manoah and Mitomer. Where do we see that from Tomer? Neviim, we know that neviim descend. Because that's where she lived.
No,
because the point is, especially in Beis Chamir, it's important to be tzniyistik so that...
Anyway.
Okay, but it's especially in Beis Chamir, that's what we're saying. Levim dichtiv chazon Yeshaya ben Amitz. Because it says that Yeshaya ben Amitz, the Gemara establishes in Megillah that any time a Navi is mentioned together with his father's name, it means his father was a Navi as well. So therefore Yeshaya and Amitz are both Levim. Malachim mi David, kings we know descended from David. Ve Amar Rav Levi, and Rav Levi said, Dovah zem asertis v'yadenim avitzenim. We have the following tradition from our fathers. Amitz v'amastia achim havu. Amitz and Amastia, who was one of the kings of Yehuda, were brothers. So there you see that from Tamar descended the kings, the whole line of Malchus Beis brothers, including Amasya. And Amasya's brother is Amos, the Navi, whose son is Yeshaya, also a Navi. So you see that at least two Navim descended from Tamar. Then the Pasuk says, he mutseis, she was being brought out. What?
It's a gear, it's not a gear.
Yeah. She was, The Pasuk says, he mutseis, she was being brought out, she was about to be burned, all of a sudden people come and tell Yehuda that your daughter-in-law is pregnant by some kind of adultery or whatever, and Yehuda orders that she should be burnt. So the Pasuk says, he mutseis, as she's being brought out, then she sent word to him, I have these three things that were left with me as a plot, and you can recognize them. One idea is that she's a Shemeres Yavam, she's not supposed to be, officially she's supposed to be waiting until Shelah grows up, and then she'll marry him, except Yehuda was putting her off because he didn't want her to marry Shelah, he figured he'll die like his brothers. But if she's a Shemeres Yavam, then there's that. So I'm talking about that not only they had Yibum, but they used to do it with other, after the Torah was given, Yibum was restricted only to brothers. Before the Torah was given, other close relatives, such as a father-in-law, might do it as well. And actually, even afterwards, in Sefer Rus, you have that Boyaz was a cousin, or a nephew, or whatever, of Machla, and ends up marrying Rus, because that's allowed off the Alacha, and they knew the great advantages of it, with Nimi Senyanim. Anyway, so the pasuk says himutzeis, she was being brought out. What do you mean himutzeis? Himitotzeis, the expression should be that she's being brought out against her will to be born. Himutzeis, Rashi says, implies in the Lashon Metzia, something found. So how is that relevant over here? Amar Rav Elazar, la'acha shenimtzu simonera, after she found the simonim, the three things, the chosim, tzila, matzah, that Yehuda had left with her, bas Samoel v'ruchakon, Samoel, who was a samach mem, the malach of Esav, came and moved them far away. He didn't want her to have them, because he wanted her to be burnt, because who's going to descend from her David HaMelech? Who's going to wind up wiping out Edom? No, not wiping out, but whatever, subjugating and conquering Edom, and he didn't want that. And then Gabriel came and brought them back to her. This is what it means. The pasuk said a kapitel in Tillim, kapitel Nun Vav, begins with the words Lam Natseach al Yonas Elim Rechokim LaDavid Michtam. The simple meaning Lam Natseach for the conductor al Yonas Elim Rechokim on the mute, faraway dove. LaDavid Michtam by David Michtam. There's various explanations. Michtam is a special kapitel or whatever. But what does this mean? Amar Rav Yechonon, Mishash and Israch, Kusimaneha, when it was Simonim were taken far away by Samach Mem, Nafis Kiyona Ilemes. She became like a mute dove. And therefore, David HaMelech is singing a song of praise to the Ebershter, Lam Natseach, that the Samach Mem was beaten, Lam Natseach, Meloshin Nitzachon, that Gabriel brought him back, and therefore her life was saved, and David HaMelech was able to descend from her. So therefore the pasuk continues by David and Michtam, meaning Shayat, the men of David, show you Moch Vitam, Lakol. Michtam, the Gemara is explaining, is Moch, humble, Vitam, and Tomim, perfect in a tumistic person in his ways, Lakol to everybody, meaning that he was humble in front of everybody. Davaracha, Michtam, show you Makose Tama. Another explanation, the word Michtam means that his wound was complete. He didn't need to be wounded by Bris Milah when he was 8 days old. He was born already circumcised. That showed that he was on a special level. Davar Acher, Michtam, the word Michtam teaches us, Kishem Shechat Nusay Hikten Asma Eitzel Mishagodim Ben Alum Atarda, just like when he was younger or smaller, before he became king, he would humble himself in front of somebody greater than him to learn Torah from him. The same thing when he was in his power as king, also he would still be humble and still learn and still humble himself in front of someone chachamim to learn from them. And Brachos, the Gemara mentions, for example, that David asks the Eibishter to remember that as a schus for me, that whenever I decide something in halacha, I never just decide it on my own. I always ask my Rebbe, Mifiboshes, whether I did the right thing. That's an example of his humility.
Mishiboshes was his
Rebbe. He was a son of Yonathan. The son of Yonathan. He was a big kind of problem, obviously. Okay. Pasuk says by Tamar, but he shocha chom yalemer. It says she sent word to her father-in-law saying, "Leish hasha eloloy anosi hora, the one who these things belong to, I'm pregnant by him." Why such a roundabout way? Came a lemer. Tell him straight out, I'm pregnant by you. Famous thing, Omer Rav Zutra Bar Tuvia, Omer Rav, Va'amilo Omer Rav Chonam Bar Bizna, Omer Rav Shimon Chassida, Va'amilo Omer Rav Yechon, Rav Shimon Rav Shimon Yechoy. Must have been a very popular teaching. Noyach Lo Adam Shiyafel Asma Lo Sech Kipshin Eish. It's better for a person to throw himself into a burning furnace, Va'al Yavin Pnei Chavei Berabim, rather than embarrassing somebody in public. Menola Mitomer. We see that from Tomer. Instead of telling them straight out, you're the father, you had relations with me. Okay, but technically it was multiple before Manterra, but still, it was still considered an improper thing. She just did it in a roundabout way. Tosfos discusses over here that Tosfos discusses that this seems to be an actual, the Gemara is saying an actual halacha, that you have to be ready to go on Mesudas Nefesh rather than embarrassing somebody publicly. And there was a good deal of discussion about it among the Mefarshim, whether that's indeed so, whether that is a halacha, in which case it might be because, for example, it's part of Shvichus Damim, because the Gemara says in Bava Masiyah, that a person's face turns pale, blood drains out of their face when they become embarrassed. Therefore, it would be part of shvichus damim, and a person would have to be moist and nefesh for that. Or Meiri says that not necessarily does the Gemara mean it as a halacha. It's just saying like to show how serious halbonas panim is.
It is the halacha.
That's according to Tosfos, it is. But it's not brought in Shulchan Aruch as a halacha. Let's put it that way. No, so that's the thing. She did want to save herself, but instead of saying straight out, these are yours, here's the simonim. Do you recognize them? If you recognize them, fine. If not, then yeah, I'll. All right.
So it matters, I guess. Yeah.